Welcome to Canucks Central at Noon. Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Drops off for Horvat, back to Hitler, then to Horvat in the slot. He scores! Bo Horvat in overtime!
On the home of hockey, Sportsnet 650.
Landeskog turned it over to Horvat, right to the slot. Pedersen scores! Is there anything this kid can't do?
Here's Scott Rintoul and Mick Nizar.
Final show of the week. It's Canucks Central with Scott Rintoul and Bick Nizar. What is going on today, my man? How are you?
Another day in, I'm not even sure if we can say paradise anymore, but just, another day surviving. How are you?
Probably just depends. I'm well, thank you. It probably just depends on what you think of your abode.
I like my own abode, so I guess it is a paradise.
Absolutely. The company's good?
Yeah, you know, no complaints. I see you in the mirror every day. I was like, oh, you again. Great, we get to hang out again.
Fantastic stuff. Hey, I want to get something from you off the top of this show, and we're going to talk some Canucks hockey here. We're going to do our exit interview process today with a number of the players on this roster. Hit us up, 650-650, Subway text message inbox. If there's a player in particular you want to have an exit interview with or have us go through that scenario, we will do it throughout the course of this program. But just before we get to all of that, I want to hear from you. A proud athletic accomplishment for you, Bick. We all played lower-level sports at some point in time, and we all had a variety of successes and failures, some individual, some team along the way. I was asking listeners all morning long, and so many people wanted to share something that stood out for them, something they still have a connection to, they hold near and dear to their sports heart. Is there something for you in your athletic endeavors that you would put there as your proudest moment?
Can it be a coaching one, or
absolutely.
Does that be a playing one?
No, it can be anything. I had people who were referees today sharing their stories.
What's that?
I had people who were referees sharing their stories today, which I thought was great.
Awesome. I used to coach community ball here actually in the Tri-Cities area when I first started. I was young, obviously, and learning how to coach. And by the end of it, I think more than anything, as much as I, was helping the community, I learned so much from that whole process. And I actually reflect on that a lot of the time, just, how to learn how to be patient, how to put together a plan to have players develop over the course of, I feel like it was six seasons, so 3 years for me doing this. And you see the growth in some players at that age from 9 to 12. And that's still something I hold dear to my heart that, I saw rapid improvement from so many different players that, committed to their craft. I know it's, teenage ball, preteen ball, but it was so rewarding for me to see someone take it so seriously. And some of those players, went to select teams in our community. And that was one of the things that, I still have team pictures of that I still look at fondly. So more so than something I did athletically, it was to be a part of that was, something I always actually really cherish.
Well, that's something that's really relatable for a lot of our listeners, Bick, because a lot of them have coached in different sports, different levels. And as someone who has coached as well, it is a very proud moment. It's almost a father-like moment when you see one of the athletes that's under your charge get something. The light bulb goes on. They have a great season. You see it mean something to them. The amount of joy and reward that you feel as a coach having helped facilitate that process, it's quite unlike something else.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think we all relate it to when we were athletes, right? And we don't necessarily sit there in the moment of I'm clearly getting better and I'm clearly figuring this out and all the work that I've put in. You don't necessarily see it in the moment. And from a coach's eye, the coaches see it in the moment because they've asked you to try to do something. And more often than not, when you're playing, you're just kind of playing. You're just reacting. You're just trying to make a play. And coaches kind of see it from a different eye. And, when you're removed from the process of trying to do the day-to-day development from the player's perspective and the coach gets to see that, that's where that reward comes in. You can say, okay, over a course of 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 4 months, you can see the patterns develop to how a player gets better.
Well, and here's the other part of it. When you're the athlete and you're growing up, it seems so big in your life. Like it's the yep. only thing. And when you lose that playoff game that means you're never going to get to play high school soccer or basketball again, it's devastating. And you can't even think about tomorrow because most people, they don't go on beyond that. And it just seems like such a big part of your world. And once you're a coach and you've got some more life perspective, you realize what it means in the grand scheme of things. So you can see those victories along the way that some of your athletes make that, hey, it might not have resulted in a championship or you being selected an all-star or that you're ever going to go on to another level beyond this. But you can see that it's going to be a big deal for them eventually and that they got personal growth out of that.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the reasons I love sports so much, not even so much at a professional level, right? Because it causes a nice distraction and a nice escape for people. Don't get me wrong. And it's important. But at the grassroots level we're talking about, like there's so many team building philosophies that translate to now in my life in the corporate world or business world that I'm sure many people can refer to as well, as of how to be a part of a team, how to work together to achieve something bigger. You know, those aren't responsibilities you relate just to sports. Anybody that works in an office, so I know right now you probably aren't going into the office every day, but anybody that's part of a team for business, you can't operate businesses when you're dealing with egos at times. And it's important to have a stated goal and have everyone chip in their worth to try to get towards that goal.
Well, what do we need right now? We need all of those things you learn from sports. We need self-discipline
absolutely.
Right now. We need pulling together for a common good. We need to put we ahead of me. All of those things you can learn through sports, and at their best, sports teaches you those things, and we need that so much with the situation we currently find ourselves in.
Yeah, and not to say you can't learn these things, you know, academically or anything like that, but I feel like, and one of the reasons like sports resonates to me so much is it's like an accelerated program of doing it, right? Yes, you can learn it, but the application of sports, doing it that way, comes at such a young age. It just got indoctrinated to me that it's like, yeah, this is something that I know how to do now moving forward.
Scott Rintoul, Bick Nizar, this is Canucks Central. Just before we get into the exit interview, as a guy who had one a couple of years ago, we've talked about a little bit this week, Bick. Just wanted to address Nikita Trampkin. We continue to get questions on him to the inbox and people
wondering. Wait, hang on. What was your athletic achievement?
Well, you know what? One I shared just before the break, but I'll quickly share again. I threw a touchdown pass in my final high school game that tied the game up
yes.
in the playoffs at the time, and we had 10 seconds to go. We actually missed the convert and lost in overtime, but that moment, it was a really big deal for me. I think being a part of the field in Boston the year that the marathon was bombed and then going back the year after, those are pretty special
right.
ones to me. Listen, I wasn't winning the race, nothing like that.
Yeah.
I'm not this elite runner, but just being able to be there and be a part of that, that one for me as well is right up there in my life, just with what it meant far beyond getting through 26.2 miles.
Yeah, no, that's those are historical markers too, right? That, you know, forget what you achieved as far as in the race. Like, you're going to remember that you were part of a surreal race there, and you're part of that history.
Yeah, it's, you know what's funny? You know they made the movie about it with Mark Wahlberg, mm-hmm. and I didn't see it when it first came out.
He was playing you, right?
Yeah, he was playing me. That's exactly who Wahlberg was playing, right down to my Boston accent. But when the movie came out, I didn't see it right away, and eventually it made its way to Netflix or whatever platform it was released on, and my wife and I sat down and watched it, and I was really surprised how emotional I got through the entire thing.
I'm
really
sure,
surprised.
Yeah.
Because when I was there at the moment, because of what I do for a living, when people found out I was there, all of a sudden I was bombarded with phone calls from radio stations, television stations, looking for somebody who was on the ground in Boston, what it was like, what do you feel like, how scared are you, all of those different things. And I was on the phone for hours that day just answering requests from across the country. So, and you know this as well, when you do what we do for a living, you compartmentalize. You go into work mode, and then you process these things later. So until I watched the movie again, I'm not sure I had actually tapped into everything I was feeling that day and what went down, and sitting and watching with my wife, who was at the time pregnant with our first daughter, and the thought of what might have been or might never have been in that case, it stirred up a lot, man.
Yeah, I bet. And, you know, I was here in Vancouver, but like I remember living moment to moment of that whole that whole day of all the things that transpired from it. So you being in the moment, like that's I can't even imagine having to do radio hits while you're doing that, right?
Yeah, it was a little different. I'll say that. It was a little different. Surreal is the word you used, and it was that. Let's get back to the Vancouver Canucks, or at least start in on the Vancouver Canucks a little bit. I did want to address the Nikita Trampkin situation briefly. Some people have been asking, is he a viable option for the Canucks? Could he even play in the NHL? I just want to address a couple of those questions. Number one, he is a viable option for them. I'm not saying that's their first option, but the Canucks organization believes that Trampkin is good enough to play in the NHL next season. Will that be on their blue line? I don't know. But they believe he is an option. And there is a world, Bick, where he is part of the top six here, or at least competing to be in the top six for this team next season.
I like the back end of that statement, competing for the top six, right? Like, okay, he hasn't played here since, what, 2017?
That's right.
Is my timeline? Yeah. And think of, okay, think of who the defenders were on this team last year. And it wasn't good. And a bunch of years ago, it wasn't any better. It was Lucas Pisa and Ben Hutton, and he was outplaying Philip Larson, I think, was on that team back then, right? Like, that's who we're talking about. It was in the top six getting minutes that allowed Nikita Trampkin to play 66 games. And look, different scenario then. He was beating out those guys for bottom six roles. He's got to beat out a different cast of character to get bottom pairing roles now, or bottom pairing minutes. And, you know, we've talked about Jordy Benn. Has he lived up to his deal? Okay, but, like, Jordy Benn is a bottom-pairing defenseman, legitimately. He just hasn't played to that standard this season. But in the over the course of his career, has been very much that. Real NHL D-man. I don't know what we're going to get from Nikita Trampkin 4 years removed from when he played. And we keep... He's become, like, the mystery box player. That one day, hey, we never know. You can get Nikita Trampkin back. Like, he was getting scratched in the KHL, and that's not necessarily an indication of, you know, you can never make it in the NHL, but let's also, you know, apply some logic here. What are we really expecting? Is it another body in the organization? Sure, that's fine, but because he's been built as this mystery box character, everyone that's been clamoring for the past 18 months, like, I want names from everyone, that if it doesn't work out, okay, you guys better show up, tail between your legs of, hey, you know what, maybe we made too big of a deal over this for the past 2 years. Like, maybe he's just okay. Like, maybe he's just an AHL D-man, and he can have a career here in North America. I understand the hype around it, but, like, we got to cash some receipts on why this becomes a topic every 2 months.
Well, and I'm just trying to bring a little perspective to this as well. I don't think he's the first option. I just think he's an option. And let me just paint a scenario in which Nikita Trampkin's either in the top six or competing for the top six, and he's part of their top seven or eight defensemen, however their roster looks next year. If Chris Tanev leaves, if Troy Stetcher looks to be too expensive and they use him as a trade chip, and the Vancouver Canucks take some of whatever cap dollars they have and apply them to Jacob Markstrom, who knows with Tyler Toffoli, what happens with Jake Virtanen's contract situation next year. If they find themselves in a situation where they are trying to fill a couple of holes in their blue line somewhat from within, as opposed to going out and getting a guy, there's a world where Nikita Trampkin, as a very affordable defenseman who they believe can be an NHL defenseman next year in this league, becomes a part of that group.
Okay, so he's going to have to play on the left side, right? So he's already behind two guys for sure.
No question.
Right?
And they believe that he would be best suited to be on his left side. He's played a lot on the right, but they believe as a left-hand shot that he'd be best on the left side, yes.
So of guys that are going to get graduated up into the lineup from Utica or even someone that they can grab, like, you're basically competing for the Oscar Fantenberg, Jordy Benn role. And
correct.
If I'm the Canucks right now, like, I'm taking Jordy Benn every single time over Nikita Trampkin. I'm taking Oscar Fantenberg over Nikita Trampkin. So best case scenario right now, he's fifth in line. And that's not even including Olli Juolevi. That's not even including, I guess, Rafferty would play the other side. But, like, there's other guys that are here already. I guess Fantenberg's would be a... UFA, but like there are guys signed already that should be ahead of him significantly in the pecking order. So competing for a spot is best case scenario.
Yep. I just want to put it out there that he's an option, but I think the context you've put it in is the proper one. And look, this all falls into the, well, hey, maybe we think Jordy Benn's actually better on his offside than he is on his strong side, and he's one of the solutions on the right, so that opens up a competition on the left. It is that third pairing competition. I'm just saying it's an option. It shouldn't be completely dismissed, and at the same time, to your point earlier, the hype train needs to slow down a little bit here.
Yeah, like, what's the evaluation of the player, right? It's not as if his metrics even back when... I know the team really struggled those seasons, but it's not even as if they were so great. It feels just like he's the potential of what he could be because he's got such size. People get enamored with it. Let's evaluate the player himself. And, you know, generally speaking, as far as possession numbers, which, you know, tell a part of the stories. Yes, he's got physical traits. It's not as if he was so dominant back then that it's worth, you know, having all this conversation in regards to Nikita Trampkin. He was a negative possession player, a negative scoring chance player. I don't understand the hype about this.
It's because of everything you said earlier. He's the mystery box player, and when players are breaking in and they have certain traits that give them the potential to turn into something, people are going to always look at the upside until they see enough evidence to say, well, I guess that's not going to work out. You know this as well as I do. That's why young players that get drafted and have these great junior careers or do something in the AHL, everyone is convinced it's going to translate immediately to the NHL. This is not exclusive to Nikita Trampkin. This goes with a
lot
of
And here's the other thing. Okay, let's say he shows up next year. He'll be 26 years old with not a lot of NHL experience, but some NHL experience. Like, you don't. Is he going to get judged upon mistakes as well, right? Because you would treat it as like, well, he's kind of a young player. Well, no, he's not going to be a young player. He's got to get treated as a veteran. He's got to get treated to the same standard everyone applied to Philip Holm, Philip Larson, whoever these depth D men are. Like, that's a standard. This is no longer like, well, this is my guy. I've been caping for 2 years. I can live with a couple of mistakes. No. You got a standard that you got to perform now. He bypasses development time in the NHL. That's his responsibility. And because if he comes back, you've got to put up NHL style numbers immediately. You can't just fill a role. You can't just be like, well, he kind of moves the puck, but he's got some defensive mistakes. No. He's got to be able to stay in the lineup then all the time when he comes back.
Yep, no question about it. Just wanted to put that to bed for the week. We've got a lot of people asking questions about it, a lot of people tweeting, hey, Trampkin, saw the article, saw what Ben Kuzma wrote about what his agent had to say. Just wanted to put that to bed a little bit before we got to the end of Canuck Central this week. Did you see the Brian Burke tweet last night that caught a little attention on Roberto Luongo?
Yes, I did.
How about that? We got to get to that before we get to the exit interviews as well. Brian Burke puts it out there on Twitter last night. A fan asks him, hey, what are some of the big deals you were in on but never were able to pull off? Well, how about Roberto Luongo to Toronto? And it's not that we didn't know the Leafs were interested when Berkey was there. And Dave Nonis, of course, was part of that brass as well. And obviously he's the guy who brought him to Vancouver. It's the ask that Burke said the Canucks were looking for. Gardner, Kadri, and 2 first-round picks. And that basically closed down that conversation in Berkey's mind right then.
Berkey's got to be on Twitter more often because with great tweets like that, it's great for us looking for content right now. But look, that's kind of how negotiations go. You ask for a lot and you settle somewhere in the middle. And by all the things we feel like that trade came down to, not that it was that close, that's how negotiations go. You start big and you work your way towards the middle. And, you know, the phrase I like to use is like, if you're not making, if you're only doing trades that you're going to win, you're not making enough trades. And think of where that ask comes from Vancouver, right? Toronto's not going to do that trade. So you keep negotiating. And if you get to a middle point and you think, oh, well, maybe we wouldn't do this. Like, that's how negotiations work. So it's really interesting to see that little nugget come out of how high the ask was back then. Also, just where we are with the goaltending trade market now.
Well, yes, absolutely. That's a good point. And the other I wanted to bring up about what you said is that part of negotiation is, yes, having that high ask or having, you know, your line where you're going to start from drawn, it still has to be good enough to keep the team interested. And that's one of the things I wonder about that. Asking for Gardner, Kadri, and a couple of firsts at the time, did that say to the Leafs, okay, these guys are delusional, we're not even going to engage in these conversations until this comes way down? You still have to do enough to hook people in and go, well, I wouldn't do that, but here's what I would do.
Well, am I getting my history wrong? Is his, like, Luongo's my contract sucks comment, that was shortly
after
a potential trade to the Leafs, not?
It is, but it's maybe a couple months removed. So Berkey said it was very close to when he got fired. So Berkey gets fired January 9th, 2013. So it happened before that.
Okay.
The trade deadline is coming up the next month, and we do know that Toronto was still interested. So there was some circling back, and we know Dave Nonis and his interest with Luongo and the whole after-hours comment prior to getting him here, hey, he's the best goaltender in the world. They desperately wanted to get him to the center of the universe. They just couldn't come to an agreement. It's interesting where the ask started, though.
Yeah, that's fair. I didn't equate the Berkey's own timeline to it. That's a fascinating. And we're kind of doing like what ifs right now on the program. We've done it for the past couple of days. This is definitely one that we have on our list to get to, so maybe we'll do it today. But when you go down through all the list of, okay, what could have happened if the Leafs do get Luongo, you know, let's just look at that from that point of view. Like, they lose a couple of building blocks as far as, you know, what their team looked like moving forward. They didn't have a lot of success as a team, but like Kadri was really important to their team. Jake Gardner, really important to their team. If you look at it from the Canucks angle, okay, what do those two first round picks do for you? Because it's not as if the Leafs like really springboarded for a lot of success thereafter as well. So really interesting to see how that could have played out from both perspectives.
Yeah, no question. It actually ties into what I think is an interesting nugget about trades, and just as you and I speculate, hey, how they go down, how they get consummated, or how they don't get consummated in some cases. When Luongo got traded to Vancouver, that deal almost fell apart at the 11th hour. That was the Bertuzzi deal, if everybody remembers correctly. And Dave Nonis is the guy who's pulling the trigger on it, and they've got the deal kind of principally in place, and it's Roberto Luongo and Lucas Krajicek on their way to Vancouver, while Todd Bertuzzi, Alex Auld, and Brian Allen are on their way back to Florida. And Dave Nonis, I can remember him telling me that they were basically, the framework is done, that's what it's going to be. And Nonis, at the last second with Mike Keenan, says, well, hold on a second here, I'm sending you three players, you're only sending me two, you got to throw something back in. And Keenan says, what are you talking about? And he said, well, just toss me a late round pick, and then it's three for three, and it's all good, and everybody goes away. And Keenan says, you're nuts, and hangs up the phone. And Nonis said, I went to bed that night sweating. I couldn't sleep. I thought, I've just screwed this up because I asked for a sixth-round pick. And eventually Keenan gave him the pick, but Dave Nonis thought he screwed it up just by being a little bit greedy at the end of getting what he wanted.
What's the phrase, when you make the sale, stop talking?
Yeah, it's a good one. I like it.
Like, you got the player you wanted at a really great price anyways, and you should just kind of stop talking right there and just and run away, because who wouldn't have praised Dave Nonis even if that was just the trade, right? It's not as if a sixth-round pick tipped the scales of public perception.
That's wild, man. It absolutely is.
Oh, yeah. It's funny, too, because, okay, that story right there. I'm sure there's a lot of people right now in fantasy leagues that are like, oh, I've done that. And look, it's not at the same scale, but we've all nickel and dimed at some point in our fantasy career. And here's two GMs who are trading iconic players that are like, it comes down to a sixth-round pick.
It's nuts, man. It really is, because it's exactly like your fantasy league. Exactly like that.
Yeah.
And this is high-level, millions of dollars changing hands, altering
and people's
franchises'
lives,
fortunes.
Right? Like,
oh, yeah.
You're sending people to different countries. It's wild to think about, but the process of the transaction, still very similar. As far as how the conversation goes, still very similar.
the process of the exit interview. We will engage in it next with many of Vancouver Canuck. This might be it for the season. What do the exit interviews look like? What are we asking players if we're Travis Green to come back doing, assuming they're back next year? Find out next right here in Canuck Central with Scott Rintoul and Bick Nizar.
Now more of Canuck Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of years.
It's Feel Good Friday. J-Mo taking care of us here, getting everybody tapping their foot. Good mood on this Friday. Scott Rintoul, Bick Nizar, guiding you through the final segment of Canuck Central for this week. All right, Bick, we promised people the exit interview process. Let's start at the top as far as star power is concerned. Elias Pettersson goes in to meet with Travis Green. What is the message to Elias Pettersson if this is it for the season and the Canucks are heading into next year looking ahead?
Learn how to become a bit more selfish. That's what I would want to hear said. I think he's had a great season, obviously, and he's become such a consistent player. But it still feels like there's more goal-scoring potential. And he's having a great season, but he's fifth on the team in shots. And he possesses the puck a whole lot, but he can still be a bit more selfish. Like, he's got 35 goal potential in him. And if he ups the overall shooting, the percentage might go down, but the total of goals might go up. And he's very selective, and he's very good at doing so. It's just, if you become a bit more selfish, will you score some more goals? And will you start to threaten defenders differently?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because to me that's less about the shooting. I think he just missed the net a lot more this year than we anticipated him missing. I think he took enough shots. I think he comes back and takes that volume next year. The goal total is actually up from where it is, because there's some goals he either drew iron or missed the net on that maybe he was just being a little too precise, and I think next time some of those go in. That being selfish to me is about attacking players more one-on-one, getting back to some of the Deaky Pete stuff. It's great that he's a facilitator, and I do think that's where the bulk of his points are going to come over the course of his career. But for me, that selfishness is about going one-on-one, being a little more dynamic in that regard as well.
Yeah, and I should say, like, he obviously is shooting more this year relative to last year. I think it's a minor uptick, but like, there's still more there to give, even beyond how much he did improve from last year to this year. And that's how you like live up to your full potential. It's tough to score goals. It absolutely is. But you look at guys like Ovi, like, they shoot a ton. He doesn't have to get to that level, but you know, he's got potential to have a 40 goal season in him. And to do so, you got to give yourself as many opportunities to shoot.
What about JT Miller? What would be your message to a guy who has defied all expectations this year and has become a leader immediately on this team?
Yeah, this one's really tough, but it feels like the one way you go about it is, okay, carry what you did in the last 2 months into all of next season, right? Like, going into next season, there won't be a kind of a getting to know you period, and there won't be a getting used to your surroundings period. He's got to come into next season and be the leader right away. And, you know, it's something you would expect him to fulfill, but, you know, he's got an opportunity to do it for the course of a whole season. And I think that's going to have a big impact to start the year for the next time the Canucks are back on the ice. If he's becomes the immediate voice in the room, which is a good thing, I think you'll see benefits of that throughout the locker room.
The other part of the conversation I think will be had and should be had, and this is about the mature player, and JT Miller likely knows this, but you don't want to leave these things unsaid. He's going to be looked at by teams perhaps a little more closely next year than he was coming into this season. And it's not that he just pumped up his stats in the first couple of months. People went, oh, this guy's pretty good. But he's going to draw a little more attention after coming off a season like this. No one expected him to be a 72-point guy in 69 games. He was on pace to have more than 82 points this year, which blows away all of his career totals. The great thing about JT Miller is that they don't have to have 85 points from him for him to be an effective player. And he knows that, and the Canucks know that. The one other thing I would want him to just be aware of, you don't want to take away creativity. He did have some bad defensive zone turnovers at times, and he got a little too risque in his own end. That's the one area that I would look at the video and say, hey, you know it, I know it, but this is something I need you to get through to yourself mentally. Let's just not make as many high-risk plays on our own end.
But see, I was commenting on those yesterday, and I kind of liked those to some degree. It showed that mentality of we're willing to take proper risks. Now, we can debate if those were proper risks, but given some of the context of some of those plays he did make, I was okay with them. Because this team kind of needs a mentality of, hey, we're playing to win games. And yes, there's risk involved in that, but that's who we are. That's who we're going to become. Now, does the entire group go to that mentality over the course of a season next year where they have more belief in themselves, then maybe he doesn't have to do those. Overall, I think you're right, but the spirit in which and why he was trying to attempt those plays, I agree with.
Well, yeah, just make sure that spirit occurs over our blue line. That's all it is. It's taken those awful Jameis Winston turnovers out of your game. And listen, I don't want that to be the main message, but everybody needs a little something to work on. The guy came in incredible shape. He obviously saw the direct benefit of being in the best shape of his life. So with him at this point of his career, he doesn't strike me as a guy who's going to let down in that regard. I'm not concerned with that. I reinforce that point. Hey, this is a direct result of you doing the work in the summer. You know that. Come back and be a leader in that respect as well. There's not much I'm going to haggle with when it's this season for JT Miller, but that's the one thing I would point out.
That's fair. I think that would be a popular one amongst the textures if they want to chime in. 650, 650, of, you know, just cleaning up those ones. Because it's hard to find, you know, this process isn't necessarily about finding fault, but it just, okay, what can you improve on? But it's really hard to find a fault in his game this season. He played at such a high level. And to be honest, like a type of season that, not that he would get a Selke trophy or anything like that, but like that kind of impact he had for this Canucks team.
The next one is a really interesting conversation. It is Brock Besser. How does that meeting go?
What do we have to do to get your shot back? Because we spoke a lot this season about that power play spot where he's on the left wall and, you know, you set him up for the one-timer. It doesn't really feel like that's his long-term home. I'm not sure if he's a one-timer type of guy. So what do we have to do to get you back to being the sniper? I understand he's an improved player, and I've applauded and complimented him. And I think by and large, the conversation about his overall play is misguided because he's a significantly better overall player, but people want the goals. And it's important that he supplies that. So what do we have to do to get that shot back?
Yeah, and I think it's even beyond that. I think it's finding more creative manners to use that shot as well. I think we've seen an uptick in Brock Besser's creativity as a passer. And one of the things we talked about when he was getting all the plaudits for goal scoring his first couple of years here was that he's probably a better passer than people give him credit for. And we saw that this season. And we did see improvement defensively. But maybe making the shot a little less predictable. I think that's part of it. You get a couple years in, there's a book on you, and not everybody's Ovechkin that I don't care. We know you're shooting from there. You're going to score anyway. Besser has a great shot. We didn't see it often enough this season, and I do wonder if they need to find, and he needs to find, more creative ways to use that shot.
Let me add this wrinkle too, right? Because I think we had that conversation under the guise of, oh, he's going to play with Pettersson. But let's say the scenario develops where they re-sign Toffoli. Like, I'm not breaking up that line the way it looked. So he might play on a second line with Bo Horvat. Is there a different trait that would work with Bo Horvat that you would want him to focus on? Or does he become still the same type of player?
he's still the same type of player to me. He's obviously not going to get afforded the same type of opportunity because he's not playing with as creative players on that line. It's going to be more of a straight line game. So you're going to ask him to be almost a harder player because where he's going to get some of those goals are going to change. But he's always going to get opportunity on the power play. And as long as he's here, mm-hmm. they need him to have that opportunity on the power play. I do wonder if they tinker with where they use him so that he's not so reliant on setting up in the left circle and getting the shot off from there. We know he doesn't have the best one-timer on the team. He has an accurate, heavy shot when he is on his game. Is that the best spot to use it? I think that's a question the coaching staff has to ask itself.
For sure. And look, I'm not... was to be determined if Toffoli returns or anything like that, but I just wanted to pose that question to you because it's an interesting one because of how this is going to play out over the next however many months it takes to see what happens with Tyler Toffoli.
Well, so is that, what's the meeting with Tyler Toffoli? Do you even have one? You just say, hey man, I hope you're back next year, and if so, we'll talk about it then?
You, what's that song? The Baby Come Back? You play that one.
Sounds good.
He walks in, you just hit like, was that player who had that song? You just play that and you're just like, hey, we hope you return because it seemed to fit so perfectly. Why not have a chance to have a thriving career? There you go. I hear it playing. You could be one of the most productive wingers. I think the exit meeting is really like a sales pitch.
How'd your exit meeting go? Got kind of weird, actually. Greener fired up the computer, and this is what came on. And I got a little creeped out, so I'm not sure I'm coming back to Vancouver.
Is this part of a good sales pitch or a bad sales pitch?
I think it's part of a bad sales pitch, yeah. It's going to be about the money with him. We know he's a good fit. It did seem to rejuvenate him. He and his wife seem to like the city, but we're just going on what we saw over the course of about a month. And, you know, I saw her helping out with the Canucks telethon as well. So they immediately tried to be a part of this organization and tried to immerse themselves in the culture of what it is here in Vancouver. How far that impression went, I have no idea. And
it's
going to be about the money.
They are probably also operating under, like, rose-colored glasses. Like, you know when you go on holidays and you go to a place and you have so much fun, you're like, wow, this place is great. It's great when you're there on holidays. Would you like living there? Like, it's a totally different story, right? They basically just had a honeymoon in Vancouver.
That's a good way to put it. And yet everybody does have that discussion when you're somewhere like Hawaii or on your beautiful beach somewhere in the Caribbean. You know, what would we do? Like, how could we get here full-time and have these days every single day? It's great when you're not
working and you're doing the day-to-day commute through traffic or anything like that. Every holiday's awesome.
Oh, for sure. Hey, we'll run a B&B. Huh, you're the first person to think of that. There aren't many of those here.
It's like every teenage guy has had the conversation of, we should own a sports bar when we grow up. It's the same conversation.
Yes, it is. Speaking of conversations... what does this year's conversation look like with the captain of this team, Bo Horvat?
Defensive responsibilities. The overall production, you know, he's. I think we'd like to see more 5-on-5 as far as goal scoring. But to me, there isn't a candidate right now coming up next season for another guy who's going to take a shutdown role. So that's going to get tasks to him once again. And so you've got up that part of his game. And to me, it's there. We've seen it. But the overall chances, I think, that he gives up needs to come down. He can be a really strong two-way player. But right now he's trading chances. We want to see more games where he's just dominating the puck.
Yeah, especially in his own end. You're absolutely right. And the message overall is you need to be harder to play against. Right now, you're not hard enough to play against. Whose tape would you show him? Is there another center in the league that maybe is in the similar age range or a couple years advanced past Bo Horvat? And you would say, I want you to put this in. I want you to watch it a bunch of times this summer. And that's the mentality I want you coming back with next season.
Are we looking at, quote unquote, second line centers, or are we just looking at just anyone?
Sure, second line centers, guys who we look at great threes that probably could be twos somewhere else.
I think kind of like, okay, if we're looking at just those twos, like a guy like Nazem Kadri, like that guy has his defensive game down and he's able to produce as well. Other players, like Andre Kopitar to me is like one of the gold standards. I know that's superstar we're talking about, but like that's one of the gold standards of two-way play. And it's someone that's in the division, he's certainly seen a lot of him. Can you start modeling that part of his game? Sean Couturier, another guy, again, a first-line center I know, but you know, takes care of the defensive responsibilities of his game and thrives off of it to create offense.
Yeah, those are really good examples to use. Couple of quick texts coming in. Do you think that Miller gets a letter next year? Preferably want him to be the C, but we all know that's not happening. That comes from Jimmy. Yes, I do think he gets an A next year. You?
Yeah, for sure. I don't even think it's much of a conversation. All the people that are, you know, there's been a lot of calls for it, obviously, from fans. I would relax and I would assume it is coming. But you got to remember, it's not going to be a C, but the leadership group is what's important here. And overall, he's part of that leadership group. So he doesn't need to have a C to be one of the more vocal members of the team.
A also stands for Adam. How about Gaudette? What would you like to see improve?
I think it's similar to Bo Horvat, because you want that burden taken off of Bo Horvat. And not that Adam Gaudette's going to be just a pure, scrappy, shutdown third-line player, but if he starts improving that, you can spell Bo Horvat more often. You don't need to have it always be on a second line to be that matchup role. And if they're able to take that responsibility a little bit, like say the games where there isn't really a true second line, okay, now it's the third line's role to try to slow down like Minnesota's second line or something like that. You can't always task it to Bo Horvat. It's going to be on you to improve that in your game.
Yeah, I agree. And part of that specifically is faceoffs. We need you better there.
Yep.
We can't have Bo coming out here every single time. We don't want to use Miller in defensive zone situations all the time either. We want to use him in offensive situations. We need you to get better in the dot. We need you to be stronger in that area. And we've got one of the best guys who can teach you. His name is Manny Malhotra. You guys are going to see a lot of each other this summer.
And it, like that improvement helps out so many other guys, and that's why it's so key. Like it helps out all the things we're talking about. Borat, hey, can you produce more 5-on-5? You know what help if he didn't take so many defensive zone draws, right? So having another player that can take that responsibility from the center position would be massive.
Last forward I want to get to here before we jump down to the defenders, Jake Virtanen. What are you saying to Jake?
I want more, how do I say this correctly, like net front physicality. And I don't just mean like power play, setting up a screen or something like that. The ability to take the puck to the net is still something that is lacking in his game. And one of the reasons I think it's not as developed, it's like I'm not sure if biomechanically he's set up to do it, to sink his hips, lower that shoulder, drive through the player, and take the puck to the net. So do you need better flexibility, whatever it is, if you incorporate that part into your game more consistently, well, then you'll become the player that everyone thinks you can be.
You see JT Miller? Do you know why he had such a good season? He was in the best shape of his life. We've had this conversation before. I don't want to have it again next September. You might think it got blown out of proportion. I know you are in better shape. I need that to improve more. That's going to be a constant fight for you, Jake, but this needs to be your best summer ever of getting in shape. He's obviously not the same guy he was 3 years ago, Bic, but that conversation needs to go away for Jake Virtanen. That is very controllable. There are certain things in this game with the random bounces and a frozen ice surface, all of those that you're never going to be able to control. Sometimes puck luck. Jake Virtanen needs to be in the best shape of his life next year, full stop.
You know what's funny too is neither of us mentioned anything about skill. Like the skill is there, the certain aspects to his physical gifts is there as far as like front just straight line skating. That's there. We're not talking about game awareness. We're not talking about defensive play, because his role, the best version of himself, is a scorer, right? And that still has some value. Needs to improve it, of course. But what does he need to work on the most? The two things that we mentioned.
All right, I'm going to hit you rapid fire here because we're running out of time. One more forward, yeah. Two defenders. Roussel, Stetcher, and Ben. Hit each of those guys for me.
Roussel is the real question mark is, was it an injury issue that you were inconsistent, or are we going to get the real version of you now? And if we get the real version of you now, hey, look, there might be a role in inconsistent second line play where you can jump up and be the guy we use up and down the lineup. He should have had a chance up and down the line this year. It never looked like he really truly recovered. What's the type of player we're getting? That responsibility is going to be on him. Stetcher, puck movement, right? Like we're still having a conversation about acquiring third pairing puck moving D-man. If you look at where it's going right now, Chris Tanev, I'm not sure if he's going to come back. Tyler Myers probably is going to play with Quinn Hughes next season. We need more puck movers. If it's on the second pairing, if it's on the third pairing, we need puck movers. You got to improve that part of your game. And finally, what was the third one? Oh, Jamie Benn. You got to become the player we thought we were getting. If it's easier for you on the right side, maybe we explore that. But it's the same conversation with Troy Stetcher. We need puck movers. You're billed as a guy who can do that functionally at a third pairing level. That needs to become a thing. You can't be making mistakes in your own end again.
I mean, Hughes has to get better as well. It's hard to see how he gets better than what he did this season, but he's going to. I know they'll stay at it. And one of the great things is he comes from a hockey family where, you know, if he's training in Michigan all summer, even with the circumstances we've got right now, he will come back better. We know that.
That's a softer conversation, though, right? Like, think of the tone we were just talking about when it comes to Vertanen. It's, we don't want to have the same conversation come September. You know, there's a reliance on, from a coaching staff point of view, that Quinn Hughes is going to take care of his own.
Last but certainly not least, I want to get this in. The Canucks are going to have a COVID-19 50-50 relief raffle. It's going to launch tomorrow. And so beginning at 12 noon and going all the way till April 11th. So it's going to be for a week. You can get in on an online 50-50 jackpot that already includes $40,000 from unclaimed jackpots through the 2019-2020 preseason Canucks games. So the 50% proceeds of this are going to go to COVID-19 relief. Get in on this online. Head to the Canucks website. You can obviously get in there. Good initiative. I like to see that. They've always been community-minded, Bick, and this is no exception.
Absolutely. And also, just they're also doing Fan Hero Awards in place of the Player Awards and Fan Appreciation Game that was scheduled in the final home date of the season. They are launching a Fan Hero Awards program as well. So they're doing quite a bit as far as, you know, recognizing and being involved in this COVID-19 situation.
That ties in nicely to what you guys are doing at the end of the program each and every day, recognizing some local heroes who deserve a shout-out.
Yeah, we'll be doing that again today. Thank you for all the nominations yesterday. So during the show, text us 650-650. You know, you're out in your balconies, you're out on your sidewalks celebrating our essential workers, and you're making so much noise. It's so awesome. And a way we wanted to personalize it is, if there's someone you think about when you're doing that, let us know. Text us 650-650. We'll get a personalized shout out for whoever is important in your life that is helping keep our communities afloat right now.
Absolutely. Justin Morissette keeping us afloat back at the station. Bick, I want to thank you. We've got some programming changes over the next couple of weeks, shifting our clocks a little bit. So we won't have Canuck Central for the next couple of weeks, but it's been a fun year working with you to this point, buddy. And thanks for all of your hard work on this program.
Absolutely. I echo the same sentiments. And thank you so much for everyone supporting us, texting in throughout the year, getting involved in the podcast, whatever it is. It's been a blast, and looking forward to resuming this when the time permits.
Absolutely. And you will hear Bick again on the station this afternoon, every day on the program as well. I'm back 9 a.m. Monday morning. Bick and I say this at the end of every week and as many shows as we can throughout the week. Our DMs are open at Bick650, at Scott Rintoul on Twitter, at ScottRintoul650 on Instagram. You want to message us, you feel like you need somebody to talk to, you just want to feel a little bit normal by having a sports conversation, we can do that via text. Don't be afraid to reach out. A lot of people going through a lot of tough times right now. We're hoping to get you through that by entertaining you. Reach Deep will do that for you next right here. Dan Riccio, Randeep Janata on your home of Canucks Hockey, Sportsnet 650. Baby, come back.